It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later in the hour, educators, parents, and students are all struggling to find their way through distance learning right now, but the challenges are even greater for special education students. I'll talk with Daniel Van Sant of Disability Rights Iowa, Gina Hale, a special education advocate in Davenport, and Bonnie Lowry, special education consultant for the Meskwaki Settlement School. If you are a teacher or a parent of a special needs child, we also want to hear from you. Send us an email. Tell us what you're experiencing right now, what your concerns are, what's working, maybe some positive stories out of your district as well. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or give us a call at 866-780-9100. But first, April is Autism Awareness Month, and Autistic Iowan Tyler Leach has come up with a unique way to help people experience what it's like to walk in his shoes. In 2017, he launched his Barefoot Autism Challenge, and he was recently featured on The Life Autistic from Iowa PBS. He is on the phone with me now. Hello, Tyler.
Hello, Charity. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for talking with me today. And Tyler, let's talk just a little bit about who you are. You're 27 years old. You live in the Des Moines area. Tell me what you do.
Yes, I work at Wells Fargo as an operations processor. I analyze merchants, check their credit, and see if it's in good standing. I'm also a member of the Autism Society of Iowa Board of Directors on their fundraising committee.
Tyler, do you remember how old you were when you understood that you are autistic?
I think it was back when I was in sixth grade. My mom talked to me about it, asked what makes me different, and I told her my glasses because not a lot of people wear them. And then she told me what autism was, and I took it very well.
What does it mean to you to be autistic? You've had a lot of years to process that and learn more about other people with autism. So what does it mean?
For me, it means, I think, differently than other people do and have some different ideas, but that's okay because it makes me unique.
So you feel like being autistic is part of what makes you special?
Yes.
Tell me about where you got the idea for the Barefoot Autism Challenge. As I mentioned, you launched this challenge back in 2017. What gave you the idea?
I got the idea because I am in a barefoot enthusiast group because I like being barefoot. I'm actually barefoot right now. And I came up with the idea to do an autism challenge because a lot of people with autism prefer to be barefoot, and shoes and socks can provide barriers for them, even making them feel constricting. And the human foot is one of the most sensitive parts of the body. So that's basically where the idea came from.
And how does the challenge work?
Throughout the month of April, you just post a picture or video on social media of you walking barefoot and share why you advocate for someone with autism and what that means to you.
When I'm walking barefoot, what do you want me to think about? What do you want me to experience when I do this challenge?
I want you to think about what the sensations of what you feel and think about how someone with autism might have different sensory aspects of those things that you're feeling and describe how you feel while doing the barefoot walk.
When you walk barefoot, what are you feeling?
When I do it, I feel a sense of calmness. I also feel grounded and more aware of my surroundings.
Tyler, this challenge is simply for people to take off their shoes and socks and to walk barefoot. This is an awareness-raising challenge. I mean, there are so many things out there to help raise money for different organizations, but you just want people to have this experience. Why is that important to you?
It's important to me because the sensory aspect of autism can sometimes be overlooked. And by having people do this challenge, they will get a better understanding of how sensations are for someone on the spectrum.
Well, and I think when we think about the sensory aspect of autism, sometimes we focus on how that sensory aspect can mean that autistic people can be overwhelmed in some of our social situations with the sound or lights or colors even. But your challenge invites us to think about it as a positive, to think about some of the special ways that you can experience the world because of your sensory differences.
Yes, exactly.
Tyler, tell me about what it was like for you when you were going to school. What kinds of special accommodations you had in the classroom?
When I was in school, they had me arrive early to the classes, so I wouldn't worry about being late. And I also had some notes to help me out with tests, which later transitioned to college for extended time on tests. And I also had, when I was in elementary school, a special eds class where I would go to another room and do some things for the teacher in that class and then go back to my regular room.
Right now, students all over the country and, in fact, all over the world can't go to school because of COVID-19. What do you think that would have been like for you as a special education student? Let's think back to elementary school. What would that have been like for you if you were told that you couldn't go to school anymore?
That would have been very hard for me because I love school and I love seeing my friends and the teachers and all that. So I think my mom would have done some social stories with me to help me get through this.
Tell me what a social story is.
What a social story is a story that talks about an experience your child may be going through, and it gives you some ways of how you can handle this situation better and what to expect from the situation.
Can you give me an example of a social story that you remember that your mom shared with you when you were a child that helped you?
Yes. One social story involved me getting my tonsils removed. I was 5 years old at the time, and she read a social story to me telling me what to expect when I got to the hospital and what they'll do for the surgery. And she also told me about the foods I can eat after the surgery was over.
And that helped prepare you to stay calm and deal with what was going on.
Yes.
Tyler, I know that Special Olympics has been a very important part of your life and continues to be a very important part of your life. In addition to schools closing, a lot of those special opportunities are also being canceled. How do you think parents can help their children understand what's happening right now? And I know there's going to be a lot of heartbreak and a lot of disappointment, but it's something we all have to do to stay healthy.
I think the best way that people can help out those individuals is to just tell them that you can chat with them online and you can always pray for them, reach out to them for support, and know that they're always going to be with you in your heart, and this too shall pass, and you will get to see them in person again.
How has your life changed because of COVID-19?
I've been staying at home a bit more, having a lot of time to do some house stuff.
Are you able to work from home, or is that just not part of your life right now?
Right now, working from home is not in my books right now, but I hope to work from home in the future.
Tyler, we only have about 30 seconds left. What do you want people who are listening right now to understand about autism?
Autism is a very unique thing, and it doesn't make that person any smarter or not smarter than anyone else. It just is a different way they process things.
Tyler, thank you so much for talking to me. And my kids and I are going to do your Barefoot Autism Challenge this afternoon. But thank you for sharing your experience with all of us.
Thank you.
And please stay safe. Tyler Leach is an autistic Iowan. He's come up with a unique way to help people experience what it's like to be autistic in a small way. He launched his Barefoot Autism Challenge back in 2017, and he invites everyone to take a barefoot walk and experience the sensations of walking barefoot. He's also been featured on The Life Autistic from Iowa PBS. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to focus on the needs of special education students during this pandemic. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our physical school buildings are closed for the rest of the year, and each district has come up with a plan for distance learning. This is an extraordinary time for educators, for students, and for families. It's not an easy time for anyone. But for some families, distance learning is easier than others. For those with reliable internet, plentiful devices, and motivated students, this is going to be hard, but it's doable. For those who don't have those advantages, it's going to be a lot harder. Many homes do not have reliable internet. Many students have to care for younger siblings. Many parents and teens are working outside the home where they could be exposed to COVID-19. And we can't tackle all of those challenges this hour on Talk of Iowa. We're going to focus on the needs of students with IEPs, Individualized Education Programs. And with me now is Daniel Van Sant. He is an attorney with Disability Rights Iowa. Hello, Daniel.
Good morning, Charity. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And as I mentioned, the challenge that educators are facing is humongous right now. And yes. So I don't want to set a tone that we are picking apart the very hard work that educators are doing this hour. We're going to focus on the needs of special needs students, special education students. But I don't want this to be construed as an attack on our school districts in Iowa or around the country, because people are working very, very hard to meet the needs of their students. Now, that said, tell me a little bit about how what we've heard from Governor Kim Reynolds and what we've heard from the U.S. Department of Education changes the equation for special education during this time.
Yeah, so like you said, students in special education come with special education plans, IEPs or 504 plans that help specialize and direct their education on an individualized basis while they're at school. And so the challenge now is that these students are of course not going to the brick and mortar buildings. And so we're having discussions about not only how do we address those education needs that they had prior to the school closures, but, you know, like Tyler mentioned, a lot of students who are now being educated at home are going to be struggling with this tremendous change to their schedule, understanding what's going on, responding to the stresses and anxieties that they hear on the news and with their families. And so really, we're just trying to figure out how can these plans be followed to the best of everyone's ability while students are now being educated remotely from their homes.
And how did what school districts are required to do for special education students change during this time?
So right now, everything's kind of happening on a district-by-district basis. And so if the schools have closed completely and they're not providing any education services, that means they're not providing services to students in general education or any services at all, then those schools for right now are not being required to provide special education services as well. If the schools have closed, but they are offering required distance learning, whether that's through packets, through the mail, or online or over the telephone, if that required learning is still happening remotely, schools are still responsible for following students' IEPs as much as they can. Of course, there are aspects of the special education plans that probably can't be implemented in students' homes, but they are still having to have these conversations about how to implement the plans as best they can during remote learning. And then for the schools that have closed but are offering voluntary services, there's a misconception maybe that offering the voluntary services means that you don't have to provide accommodations or don't provide special education minutes, but that's not true. Even if schools are providing voluntary education at this time, they still need to think about ways to make that voluntary education accommodating and accessible to students with various disabilities.
You have been hearing from a lot of families of students with special needs. What kinds of concerns are you hearing?
So I think a lot of the concerns that we're hearing from parents are really around what this is going to look like for children after the closures end. There's a lot of concerns about students returning to school or somehow making up those minutes. We've received a lot of questions and concerns about students who maybe were supposed to be graduating this semester, or for students on special education that are going past 18, what this looks like for their services. A lot of families are concerned about, you know, their kids with disabilities regressing in their skills or in their abilities while this is happening. And so those are a lot of things that I've been hearing from parents.
So they're worried that they're not going to be able to have access to services. Why are people worried that kind of service won't be renewed after this period of time?
So I don't know that there is concern that it will not be renewed. I think a lot of families are concerned about what could happen during this period. And so for a lot of students with disabilities, they may regress in certain skills faster than students without disabilities. And so the thought is that if students go without any education for 4 or 5 months until potentially school opens in the fall, they might be that much further behind, which just snowballs in the rest of their education. And so right now, a lot of people at the Department of Education, a lot of school districts and families are all working to try to come up with plans at a district-by-district level of how we can still provide any education to try to maintain what students have now so that when school starts again, they're in as good of a place as they can be.
Are you talking with people who are hearing from school districts? You mentioned that there seems to be this misconception that if schools are offering voluntary education, so not required education, that they don't need to meet the needs of their students with IEPs. Are you hearing from families who are being told by the schools that they can't meet those needs, or they can't continue to provide education for those students?
Yes, unfortunately, we have been contacted from several families from around the state that have been told that either their school will not be providing any education because of the need to accommodate students with disabilities, or that the education they are providing is only voluntary, and therefore they won't be providing accommodations or alternative formats. Of course, this is not every school district. I have certainly heard of some teachers in our state who are doing a tremendous job in moving remotely and doing things voluntarily and going the extra mile to really make sure that all students are incorporated. But we have heard from families that are being told the opposite as well.
What kind of recourse do those families have if that's what they're hearing?
So right now, obviously, every family's concern is about the safety and health of their child. In terms of recourse, I think it's really going to come down to responding sort of when the dust settles, unfortunately. I think that families, if they are concerned about the education that their students are getting right now, I would advise them to contact their IEP teams in writing and explain to their team that they are concerned about regression, or they're concerned about their child or their student not receiving education during this time. Have that conversation documented. And then if they are not getting any communication or not getting responses from their team, that might be the time to reach out to an office like ours or other advocacy or legal organizations.
We have this message from Katie, who is a special education teacher in the Muscatine schools, and she just says, thank you for bringing attention to this. As a special education teacher of students with moderate to severe cognitive disabilities, I just want to say that I'm struggling to find just how I can help my students and their parents. And I don't want to set up this idea that there's this adversarial relationship between school districts and families of students with special needs. There are a lot of special challenges that these special education teachers and districts are trying to deal with, because distance learning alone is difficult with neurotypical students. But for a lot of students, doing a Zoom meeting or a take-home packet is just not going to work. So, I mean, Daniel, is there an element to that as well, to reminding people that they need to understand that the district is trying in these extraordinary circumstances?
Yes, of course. I think it's fair to say that everybody is struggling with how to respond to this COVID-19 situation. This is something that we haven't had to deal with before. And of course, something that I talk about with families is that we all need to have a little bit of grace right now in terms of what we're expecting and what we're asking for. I think that that's a very fair question from the teacher out of Muscatine. We also have to talk about how there are a lot of teachers at home right now with their own children, and they are parenting and they are working. So we know that this is a struggle for a lot of people. I would say, in terms of best practices in accommodating students with disabilities, I think a lot of it really comes down to communication. If there are students in your classroom or in your district that have IEPs and you're not sure how to accommodate them during distance learning, I think you just reach out to those families. They know what they have in the house. They know what their internet is like, what their children's abilities are like, what they can take on day to day. And they will be able to tell you if their child needs a phone call instead of a packet, or if the video needs to be captioned, or if it needs to be at a different level. Families know their children. And if the student is old enough, of course, always ask them what they need. And I think together, if we're able to communicate and work on these plans, we should have good outcomes for everybody involved.
We're talking about the needs of special education students during this world pandemic. With me, Daniel Van Sant. He is an attorney with Disability Rights Iowa. I want to bring Gina Hale into the conversation as well. She is a special needs advocate in the Davenport area. She is also the mother of a child with special needs and a member of the district-wide Davenport Parent Teacher Organization. Hello, Gina.
Hello. It's great to be here. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today. And first of all, talk to me as a parent. I know that you have struggled to get your daughter the kind of education she needs over the years, and she's actually away at school?
She is. She's in another state right now. Hi, Daniel. Doing very well. She's receiving all of her IEP services there. So different states are approaching isolation requirements for the pandemic really differently.
All right. And she's at a residential school. So she's actually living at the school?
She is at a residential school right now. Mm-hmm. And the school is also providing special education services to the day students who attend there.
Gina, tell me a little bit about, as an advocate for students with special needs and as a parent, what are your greatest concerns right now?
I think one of the things we've been talking about in our PTO is that for us, the pandemic is really making visible some of the inequities that were already present and some of the ways in which our special education teachers in particular are kind of left to fend for themselves without adequate resources and supports. So I think we really support our special education teachers and recognize that they're doing just a heroic lift with really, really minimal help, and that what they're being asked to do takes a lot more support and a lot more training than is available to them.
Well, and of course, nobody ever thought that they would need to be trained to do distance learning with special education students. So, I mean, in understanding that, what can we do right now? Because, I mean, obviously that training is not going to be available in this moment.
Well, so I want to just, in a friendly, kind of a critical friend way, push back on the idea that we haven't had to provide online education to special education students ever before. And that what we have is a state that has sort of not maybe embraced 21st century learning as much as we could have and been ready for this. And there are lots of online resources for kids with disabilities. My daughter receives most of her curriculum in an online format because of the nature of her disability. She's not able to hold a book or hold a pencil. So all of her curriculum comes online already. And because she has a visual processing issue, her text has to be modified for her. So in many ways, these supports and services already existed in places where they're embracing them. And I think it's also worth noting that online courses have always been required to be accessible to people with disabilities. There are web content accessibility guidelines, and there are universal design for learning standards that already exist. So any of our courses in Iowa that have been online and have not been accessible are actually in violation of federal law right now. So had those things been done in a timely way, they would have been accessible to teachers to use. So those are a couple things. I think the other thing is we would really like to see, we don't see this as a teacher failure or a local education agency failure. Like our schools and AEAs are scrambling. We'd really love to see the governor and the Department of Education use this time really wisely to direct resources to training for teachers. And there are lots of training resources that exist. And I sent some of those to our producer so that they could be put online later if it's helpful to people. another piece of the puzzle, I think, is my daughter is receiving her related services, her occupational therapy, her speech therapy, her occupational therapy through telemedicine, not face-to-face. And I really like Daniel's suggestion of providing one-to-one case management, basically. That's when he's talking about teachers calling families and saying, hey, what do you have? What do you need? What do we need to do? That is one-to-one case management individually.
And Gina, let's take a short break. We'll pick this up in just a moment when we come back. Gina Hale is an educator and a special needs advocate. Also with us, Daniel Van Sant. He's an attorney with Disability Rights Iowa. We're talking about the needs of special education students during a time of world pandemic. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the needs of special education students. While our physical schools are closed all over Iowa, all over the country, and in many, many parts of the world as well, you are welcome to join our conversation with your concerns, with your questions, with your experiences. We want to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we get back to our guests, I want to read this email from Leanne. She says, I am a parent of four children who are on the autism spectrum and also struggle with anxiety. I was, quote, working from home for the first month of school closure, which required me to be on the phone or in web conferences 6+ hours a day. It was an awful time, and I was not able to be present for my kids and their needs. They were melting down more and more each week. Also, their services, PT, OT, speech, had to be canceled due to the quarantine. I am now taking the expanded Family Medical Leave Act option through the end of the school year and may need to accept a layoff after that. However, I know my employer cares about me and is very understanding. Now we're doing a homeschool where I'm giving them a lot of choices over what they get to study, when, and we also got two emotional support guinea pigs over the weekend, which has really helped them to calm down. I do run an online support group for parents of children with suspected or diagnosed behavioral emotional health issues. It's called Full Spectrum Parents Circle of Iowa. We exchange resources and share our experiences. Any parent caregiver is welcome to join on Facebook. Full Spectrum Parents Iowa is where you can find it. We want to hear about your experiences as well. If you're a teacher, if you're a parent of a child with special needs, we'd love to hear from you. Again, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or 866-780-9100. With me is Daniel Van Sant, an attorney with Disability Rights Iowa. Gina Hale is an educator. She's also a special needs advocate and the mother of a child with special needs. And Gina, just before the break, you were talking about the kinds of online resources that are available out there and that all online courses need to be accessible, are required to be accessible. So I'm curious, and I've watched this with the services that districts are offering for neurotypical students as well. It feels like every district is trying to reinvent the wheel. There's not a great deal of sharing that's necessarily going on from district to district. Why do you feel like that's the one of the main barriers here, Gina, is that every district is kind of on their own?
I do, and I think that's what I was sort of alluding to when I said we wish that our governor and our Iowa Department of Education would take sort of a stronger position in helping and supporting districts. In Iowa, we consider ourselves to be a very local control state, which essentially means everybody fends for themselves. Iowa's not the greatest at looking outside its borders for assistance, technical assistance, and districts don't really have any way to collaborate with one another. But in other states, it's a very different circumstance. I have a colleague and friend in another state that is getting tons of professional development support from her district and from the state. And reinventing the wheel is extraordinarily expensive and really ineffective.
And Daniel, is there anything you want to add to that? I know as an attorney with Disability Rights Iowa, looking at how school districts are coping from district to district is not really your area of expertise. But given all of the phone calls you've been receiving, is there anything you want to add on that topic.
Yeah, I would agree that, you know, having sort of maybe centralized supports that could go across the state would probably benefit a lot of the districts. But I think that the challenge is that so many of our districts are not able to provide the same things. And I know, Charity, you kind of touched on that at the start of this hour. We have a lot of districts that have students without access to reliable internet, or a lot of districts that, you know, have students who are also English language learners. And so there's a lot of diversity in what different districts are able to provide. And my guess is that's why this has sort of been rolled out on a district by district basis, because things are just going to be very different across the state in a state like Iowa.
Well, let's check in with somebody from a district in Iowa, a district with some unique challenges and also some unique strengths as well. Bonnie Lowry is a special education consultant for the Meskwaki Settlement School. Hello, Bonnie.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And Bonnie, you are in kind of a unique situation. Of course, you are in Iowa, but you have your own government, and your government has made some different decisions about shelter in place orders and things like that. So give me a little bit of an understanding of what's going on in the Meskwaki settlement and how that's affecting your schools.
Sure. The Meskwaki settlement has been shelter in place for approximately 4 weeks. And so when we had spring break the week of the March 16th, and it was during that time that the settlement went into shelter in place, which meant that we were doing a lot of planning during spring break with our teachers to be ready to provide some kind of learning opportunities for them the following Monday on the 23rd. And, you know, we are a one-to-one school with regard from fifth grade on through high school seniors. And EC through fourth grade, they have iPads. However, because the shelter in place came after children were dismissed for spring break, not all the materials were there. We did not know with regard to the internet access on the settlement. And we really didn't have time to prepare our teachers for what it would look like to provide online learning.
Absolutely. So you're in a situation that many, many districts, especially rural districts,
yes,
in,
yes,
Iowa are facing, although the urban districts also have some pretty incredible internet access challenges,
mm-hmm,
as well. And Bonnie, yes, I need to ask you, because historically speaking, Native people in this country have been harder hit by pandemics and mm-hmm, diseases. I mean, obviously, we haven't had exactly this situation before,
mm-hmm,
but...
Right.
That's got to create an additional fear and anxiety. How does that affect the decisions that you're making?
Well, we do know that staffs they've been allowed back into the building for 2 hours on two separate days. I think one of the very first cases in Tama County occurred on the settlement. And so they recognize the need that the community is so closely knit because they provide for themselves in just about every way, because they are a sovereign nation. And so with that being said, they knew the importance of keeping families at home to stay safe because of the transmission of COVID-19. And on a daily basis, they're continuing to find additional positive results on the settlement. And so most of our staff, we do have Native staff that are certified teachers, and every one of our students has a Meskwaki language class, which are their Native staff also. And so going into the building, it's we need to take precautions because the majority of the teaching staff comes from outside the settlement. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, by entering in and then leaving, once again, that's additional transmission. And so opening up the building for a couple of hours to go in and get materials that are needed so that learning opportunities could be organized in some kind of a synchronized way, a logical way. And also, even though we are a sovereign nation, not every one of our homes had internet. And so it was working with tribal council and other tribal operations to try to get internet service to specific families who, as we identified that they didn't have these opportunities, how to help them to access those opportunities. And without the internet, they're missing out on a lot of instructional pieces. We do have curbside pickup lunches. And with the curbside pickup lunches, we do have some packets that we can hand out, and families can gain access to learning activities in that way also.
How are you trying to connect with your special education students?
This pandemic is not a wonderful thing, of course. The wonderful thing is that we had 3 quarters of a school year in which we could develop relationships with our families before the pandemic hit. And so our case management, our teachers know their families fairly well, frequently text message with them as well as phone calls. And even to Facebook. So there are some folks that we can only get through Facebook Messenger. And so we're finding every means by which to contact those families. And so our case management folks, our teachers are in contact with them at least on a weekly basis, sometimes twice a week, attempting anyway. There are some parents that we're not able to get in touch with, and we are doing some wellness checks for those families. Our school nurses, who are both Native, maybe have some other connections that as certified staff, we're not able to get a hold of our parents. They are doing wellness checks just to see how things are going for these parents and the students during this time.
What are you telling parents of special education students? What kind of advice are you sharing with them about how they can make things work at home?
Mm-hmm. Well, we do share with them that the educational piece or the activities need to be, first of all, just a schedule. Try to get into some kind of routine about when academics will be accessed and where the student will sit to do that work. Also, teachers have set up Zoom meeting times for those that have internet, and they do full classroom Zoom, so students can see their classmates, and that's more of a social thing. And then our teachers have set up small groups, of which 2 or 3 students would Zoom at a time with the teacher, and that all seems to work fairly well. So with the parent, just saying to them, if you could help organize your student to have the Zoom time meeting, have them available, have them participate, and then also sending messages through Google Classroom or Classroom Dojo to the parents saying, this is how you access this material, kind of thing. So really, our teachers are educating our parents how to access the learning opportunity so they can help their child to also do that.
Yeah. Bonnie, thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us, and please stay well. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Thank you.
Bonnie Lowry is a special education consultant for the Meskwaki Settlement School. And we just have a couple of minutes left. I'm turning back to Gina Hale, an educator, special needs advocate, and mother of a child with special needs. And Gina, we were talking earlier about a greater need for cooperation, a greater need for professional support for special education student or special education teachers in Iowa. What would you say to families right now who are struggling to get the education that they need for their students and may not be getting it from their district, but where would you suggest they turn? How can they have a positive experience at home right now? Because obviously a lot of people are dealing with these challenges.
Yeah, I think that is a really great question. We continue to post resources on our Facebook page, Districtwide Davenport PTO, and parents are sharing lots of treasures that they're finding. I also agree with Daniel that parents can continue to turn to the AEA in their area and to their local schools and reach out for help. Unfortunately, IDEA, the special education program, is a complaint-driven process. So if you can't get help, you do need to turn to disability rights and ask for guidance for what to do. I'm really, really happy to hear Daniel say that the idea that districts don't have to provide special education if they're doing voluntary programs is a misconception. So I just kind of want to amplify that. Students do need help. Parents cannot work from home if they are also homeschooling kids with special needs. It's a full-time 24/7 job, and those services are your child's right. So work with your AEA, work with your district, reach out to other families, come to our Facebook page, and we'll continue to post links and resources for people. It's an extensive list. I don't think we really have time in the next 30 seconds to put all of them there, but I'll also send you some things that you can post on Talk of Iowa.
Okay. Well, Gina, thank you so much. Please stay well, and I hope that things continue to go well at your daughter's school.
Thanks. You stay well also.
Gina Hale is an educator and a special needs advocate in the Davenport area and the mother of a child with special needs. And Daniel Van Sand, attorney with Disability Rights Iowa, we have just one moment left here. For families that are struggling with these needs at home right now, again, where should they turn? What is your advice for them?
Yes, so Disability Rights Iowa actually has a frequently asked questions advice document on our website and our social media on Facebook and Twitter that I updated on Friday after the governor's most recent announcement. And so I obviously can't address every single issue that's going to come up today. I would direct families to our advice document and to follow our social media. Families are always able to contact Disability Rights Iowa. All of our services are free of charge. They can contact us through a phone number, which is 515-278-2502. That's 515-278-2502, or through our email at info@driowa.org. So I would just encourage families to reach out for these resources and reach out to our agency.
Daniel Van Sant, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Daniel Van Sant, an attorney with Disability Rights Iowa. We've been talking about the unique challenges facing families with special education students during this time when all of our physical school buildings are closed. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.